hope you all had a good afternoon. I had a very enjoyable one, and I hope yours was too. We're going to be looking in this lesson at a spiritual disease which weakens Christians and also local assemblies. This disease is the disease of focusing on what might be possible if only conditions were different, or if only we possessed things which we do not possess. Although the title that I think was announced was "If Only," and that is the phrase that I'm going to be using the most often throughout this lesson, there's another way of defining the topic that we're talking about today, and that is, you all have, I'm sure, heard that we need to count our blessings. But the problem is, some people count their miseries instead of counting their blessings. When the children of Israel returned from captivity and began to rebuild the temple, some of the older Israelites became quite sad and blue. And the reason was because to them, the new temple just did not appear as beautiful as the temple which Solomon had built and which had been destroyed in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. In Haggai, the second chapter, and there in verses 3 through 9, Haggai 2, verses 3 through 9. "Then the word of Jehovah came by Haggai the prophet, saying, 'Is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses?'" That's chapter 1. Chapter 2. Okay. "Who is left among you who saw this temple in its former glory, and how do you see it now? In comparison with it, is this not in your eyes as nothing? Yet now be strong, Zerubbabel, says Jehovah, and be strong, Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and be strong, all you people of the land, says Jehovah, and work. For I am with you, says Jehovah of hosts. According to the word that I covenanted with you when you came out of Egypt, so my spirit remains among you. Do not fear. For thus says Jehovah of hosts, once more, it is a little while, I will shake heaven and earth, the sea and dry land, and I will shake all nations. And they shall come to the desire of all nations, and I will fill this temple with glory, says Jehovah of hosts. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, says Jehovah of hosts. The glory of this latter temple shall be greater than the former, says Jehovah of hosts. And in this place I will give peace, says Jehovah of hosts." Do you know what he's talking about? He's not talking about this temple ever becoming as physically beautiful as the temple was before. But there was going to be something quite a bit unusual, different about this temple. Because Jehovah God in the flesh was going to dwell among men and walk within the courts of this temple and proclaim the gospel message within this temple. That's the glory that it far exceeds the physical glory. But you know, among the Lord's people today, there's a disease which sometimes causes a church to become weaker and more fragile. Sometimes members of a local church will focus on things that the local church lacks, instead of focusing on those things which we have. Counting your blessings means looking at all the things that we've been blessed with. But instead, people will be talking like, "Well, if only we had more or less children. If only we had a nicer building. If only we had elders. If only our singing sounded better. If only we had more money. If only some of those who used to be here were still here. If only we had more members. If only our preacher were more eloquent." Or they may focus on the difference in society from when they were young. 50 years ago, most people believed in the Bible, and it was easier to get people to think about spiritual things. Or before the 60s, there were not as many divorces, and there were not as much teenage promiscuity, etc., etc. Or back when I was younger, not as many people had televisions, and people were more interested in coming to hear a visiting preacher during a gospel meeting. The topic of our lesson tonight is the long-term debilitating effect which this type of focus in our lives has upon a local church. This type of problem usually originates not in the congregation as a congregation, but rather in the minds of individuals as individual people. It starts off in their own lives before it enters in to a discussion of the local church. In other words, if only I had a better job, if only we owned our own home, if only my spouse was more loving, if only my children were more obedient, if only we had more money, if only I had a better education, if only my boss respected me more. Scriptures encourage us not to focus on the things which we lack, but rather on the things which we are. Look with me in 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, verse 15 through 17. 1 Corinthians, chapter 12, verses 15 through 17. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? In this particular passage, we have the illustration. The explanation doesn't actually begin until verse 27. But just as in parables, you oftentimes have an illustration and an explanation to follow, so also in this passage, he's not talking about the congregation. He's talking about our physical bodies. Our physical bodies need one another. Let's say, for example, that there was over there a glass of water. And, you know, I want that glass of water. And the problem is that my feet want to be hands. And so instead of walking me over to where that water is, the foot wants to do something it wasn't designed to do. And what if the foot were to say, if only I had long, flexible fingers instead of these stubby toes. And if only I had a thumb so that I could grasp things. And a palm so that I could wrap myself around things. If only I had all the things that the hand has. What if the ear were to begin comparing the speed of sound to the speed of light? And then begin to feel sorry for itself because it cannot process light but is stuck with processing that slow sound so that it grows envious towards the light. Aye. Do we need ears that process sound? Of course. Do we need feet that can walk and run and skip and hop and serve as solid foundations on which we can stand firm in one place? Paul is using our human body to teach that we should focus not on what we do not have, but rather on what we can be. When Mary of Bethany anointed the feet of Jesus with expensive ointment, Jesus said regarding this act, "She has done what she could." I am sure that if Mary had wanted to, she could have sat around all day thinking about all the things that she did not have or all the things that she could not do. But that is not what she did. She did the one thing that she could do. Let's look at another woman in Mark the 12th chapter. Mark the 12th chapter. And there in verses 41 through 43. Now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury. And many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in 2 mites. Which makes a quadrants. So he called his disciples to him and said to them, "Assuredly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all that she had, her whole livelihood." Now here is a woman who could not sponsor a feast, who could not serve as a temple priest since she was a woman, who could not pay for repairs to the temple. But what was Jesus' attitude toward what she did? She had not focused on the things that she could not do. She instead had focused on the one thing that she could do. In the first century, they did not have a government welfare program as we have in the United States, as far as I know. And I've not heard anything about pensions being paid to widows in those days. But let's look at another woman who did not focus on what she did not have. She also was a widow. She also did not have a lot. But look at what she did. Acts 9, verses 36 through 41. At Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha, which is translated Dorcas. That is to say, this was a Jewish woman who had the Jewish name Tabitha, and her Greek name was Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died. When they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. And since Lydda was near Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent two men to him, imploring him not to delay in coming to them. Then Peter arose and went with them. When he had come, they brought him to the upper room. And notice this next section. And all the widows stood by him weeping, showing the tunics and garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. Now we read in the rest that Peter raises her from the dead. But the point is that she could have been thinking, if only my husband had not died, if only I was rich, if only I were a man and were able to preach the gospel. But was this the attitude of Dorcas? No. Her attitude was, what can I do to help those who need my help? And she worked on doing what she could not do. Actually, on what she could do, not lamenting all the things that she could not do. The writer of the book of Ecclesiastes speaks about those people who focus on all the things that were different back in the old days. You know, the good old days. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 10. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 10. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Thinking that the good old days were really good. Imagine that you're living in 1940 in Florida and your skin is black. You think those were the good old days? No way. So every time period has its bad times. Every time period has its good things as well. So instead of focusing on what's bad right now, let's focus on what's good. Jesus warned us not to measure the impact of our lives or the quality or significance of our lives on what we possess. In Luke the 12th chapter, and there in verse 15, we learn that covetousness doesn't have to do just with coveting someone else's possessions, but also the things which I personally legitimately own. Luke 12, verse 15. And he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. When we focus on the idea, if only I had this or that, we are forgetting what this passage is teaching. The significance of your life is not measured by how many physical resources you have at your disposal, but rather by the question of what kind of person you are in the sight of God. This same idea is also true when we consider the influence of a local church. Look in Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2, we have seven churches, of which two are commended without any thing said against them. But not all of them are that way. But I would like you to look with me at one of the two that doesn't get mentioned as often as Philadelphia, but this one also is spoken of only complimentary. It's the church in Smyrna. In verse 9 it says, I know your works, tribulation, and poverty. When he uses the word poverty here, he's speaking physical. But in the eyes of God, but you are rich. And I know the word here in Greek means slander or malignant speaking. of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. So they lived in a time period in which they were physically poor, and they also had their reputation ruined by people who were probably more respected by the community. But God knew better. We read earlier about those Israelites who were focused on comparing the second temple to the first and how it seemed inferior to the one that Solomon had built. This same group of people had another prophet who prophesied to them by the name of Zechariah. And in Zechariah chapter 4, verses 9 and 10, the hands of Zerubbabel, and let us pause for just a moment. And if you look in Matthew chapter 1 and Luke chapter 3, Zerubbabel is mentioned in both the genealogies of Jesus. Zerubbabel physically did what Jesus now does spiritually. Jesus is building his temple. Zerubbabel is set forth as one who symbolizes what Jesus is doing now. The hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this temple. His hands also shall finish. Then you will know that Jehovah of hosts has sent me to you. For who has despised the day of small things? For these seven rejoice to see the plumb line in the hand of Zerubbabel. They are the eyes of Jehovah which scan to and fro throughout the whole earth. Most of you probably remember the story of Gideon and how God did not want a huge army. And he continued to reduce them till he got them down to 300. Jesus made it clear that God did not plan a message which would appeal to the majority, and that few there be that find it. Few would respond to the gospel. Paul, in his speaking and writing, pointed out, as we've been discussing this weekend, that most people who obey the gospel are not socially prominent or intellectually wise or militarily strong. So then, if that's all true, why is it that you and I despise the day of small things? Why do we moan about all the things that we could do as a local church if only things were different? Why do we not instead focus on those little things which we can do? Turn back to Haggai. Chapter 2, verses 3 through 9. And this time, I would like us to focus on God's statement in verse 8. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, says Jehovah of hosts. The idea here is if God accepts it, then it is glorious. It is not glorious because a man accepts it. It is glorious because God accepts it. So let us ask ourselves, can we, like Mary of Bethany, seek to do the one thing that others might scoff at and ridicule, the way people like Judas did when she poured the ointment after breaking the alabaster bottle, and ridicule it? Can we, like the woman at the treasury box, ignore the meagerness of our resources and do what we can do? Can we, like Dorcas, focus on those needs which we are able to address? If each person in this congregation were to keep a list of all the things which he or she could do this week in the vineyard of God, no matter how small those things might seem to be, and then each week do the one or two or three or whatever small things there might be which we can do, how much more could this local church accomplish? Although it is true that we might not accomplish a lot at first, the long-term effect over weeks and months and years of each individual doing whatever he or she can do would have results far and above what can be accomplished in just a short while. I deliberately picked lessons that I would hope would help you after I leave, even if I never come back again. And one of the things that I have been trying to get your minds focused on is the topic of the difference between the physical and the spiritual. But there is something I haven't yet brought up. What is reality? You see, most people think that reality is defined by the things which the senses can detect. But let me tell you something. There's something more real than that. And that is that which brought it into existence. The Word of God. When Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Come," and told him to step out of the boat, what was real? The water or the Word of God? It was the Word of God that was real. Because the Word of God created reality. The Word of God is that upon which all reality is founded. This is what Jesus says to Satan when he says, "Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." How did Adam live? The Word of God made Adam live. How did the trees that Adam ate of, how did they come into existence? God spoke them into existence. How did the sun, moon, and stars, in which gave unto Adam and Eve light, how did they come into existence? The Word of God brought them into existence. And so, my friend, because this is not nearly as real as the Word of God, and the Word of God is able to save your soul, and the Word of God is able, through the blood of Christ, to bring you into fellowship with the Lord and give you a home in heaven forever. But as long as you have your eyes focused on this world, you're never going to see it. It's only when you realize that reality is something that the physical eyes cannot see, the physical ears cannot detect, nor the nose smell, but only that which the Word of God declares. If you're someone who's ready to turn your life over to Jesus, and if you have counted the cost and you're ready, then if you will allow us this evening to assist you in responding to the grace of God, when you make your way to the front, while we sing the song that's been selected.